Charles Woodson, Desmond Howard, Denard Robinson, Timanga Biakabatuka, from Yost to Harbaugh, passed down from generation to generation, Michigan football has stood the test of time. What's that feeling you get when you catch your first glimpse of the big house? When you hear, "And take the field." When you see the team emerge from the tunnel, sprint across the field, and touch that famed M-Go Blue banner. Saturdays in the fall, tailgates with friends and family, favorite players, favorite teams, and unforgettable moments. A lifetime of memories. College football in 2020 may be unique, but it has arrived at the corner of Stadium and Main, which is where you can find Michael Spath and Justin Rowe sharing their analysis, their stories, and their emotions about this year's Wolverine. This is the Stadium and Main podcast, presented by Kapnick Insurance Group, Wolverine State Brewing Company, and Lewis Jewelers.
Welcome to the Stadium and Main podcast. I am Justin Rowe, joined by my co-host, Michael Spath. And we have back with us, once again, Michigan student, Maddie Mustian. Guys, how are you doing this morning?
Doing great, Justin. It's another beautiful day here in Southeast Michigan. And the Wolverine basketball team suffocated another opponent. They're well on their way here. I was looking at the standings this morning, and you know, if they go 2-2 in their final four, they, you know, I don't think there's any way that they don't win the Big Ten based off of winning percentage. But as we'll talk about, I mean, suddenly a home and home with Michigan State at the end of the year is looking a little more challenging than we all thought it was. But I'm doing great. Maddie, how are you feeling today?
I'm great. Final day in Florida, so soaking up the last minute. Then going right back to the cold, but I'm, you know, ready to get back. Got a lot of sun yesterday, so.
Well, Maddie, it is, like I said, it is supposed to be like 40 degrees here, so it's not like you're coming back to the 20s or the teens here in Michigan, so there is an opportunity to enjoy yourself a little bit, although I can't imagine it's anywhere close to probably the 80 degrees and sun and ocean that you have down in Florida.
Oh, for sure, for sure.
So, Justin, I mean, gigantic win yesterday. Just let's start with this for each of us. What was your biggest takeaway? What stood out to you about the win over Iowa last night?
So the thing that stands out to me is that Michigan can win in any way. They proved that last night. They proved that they can win in a dogfight and in a defensive battle. And then obviously after our last podcast, what we talked about, how the way that they beat Ohio State. So they can win in a track meet and win when they're shooting 50% from three. But even when they aren't shooting the lights out, their defense clamps down on a team from Iowa that is one of the best offensive KenPom teams in the history of KenPom. Like, it is, their offense in terms of analytics has been ridiculous over the course of the season. And Michigan held them to 57 points. So my takeaway, is that they're able, that's what makes this team so dangerous, is they're not so one-dimensional. We've talked about the versatility of this team. You know, we've beat it to death at this point, but it's really just impressive how they're able to win in any type of game, whether it is that track meet type of a game, or it is something in the middle, or it's a dogfight game, like an old Big Ten game that we used to see, where it's in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll have my thoughts in a second. Maddie, what were your biggest takeaways from Michigan's big victory last night, 79-57 over Iowa?
I mean, I think you're watching the game, and once it got up to halftime, it was decently close. I think Iowa's biggest lead was three. So they're going into the locker room, you know, playing well, but it's definitely closer than I think a lot of people would like. And then they just come right out of the locker room. You know, I think their biggest lead was 22, whereas Iowa's only got Michigan to, you know, three. I think that locker room, whatever goes on during halftime, whatever Juwan Howard's saying to them, I think even if they're down at halftime, that team mentality and whatever is going on in there really, I think, lifts the spirits, allows them to kind of bust out of the gates again. Whereas, you know, some teams, I feel like if they're winning by a couple or down at halftime, you don't see them really have that busting out of the gate mentality when they come out of the locker room, which I think Michigan, you know, once we start getting to those games, obviously the games with the back-to-back with Michigan State is going to be interesting now that they just beat Ohio State. But especially once you start getting to tournament play, you know, if you're getting those close games, you're playing great competitors, you really have to be able to restart once you go into the second half and, you know, not let whatever happened in the first half, you know, mess with your head. And I think that this team is very capable of that.
Well, I think you guys, I mean, Maddie, what you're saying about the second half and the halftime, I mean, we've seen that, especially since Michigan has come back from their pause. You know, the Wisconsin game, you know, their first game back from the pause, they had a very bad first half. And then it's like they flipped a switch in the locker room and came out and destroyed. I think they were outscored Wisconsin 40-20 in the second half of that game to win. Wasn't the case against Rutgers, but then the Ohio State game. You know, what stands out to me about this team is that they, in crunch time, like, they know how to hit that extra gear and lock in. Ohio State, it was a back and forth until the final 5 minutes, when Michigan was like, all right, we're doing everything now. Like, we're playing lights out defense. We're going to make all the big shots. And that's how they pulled away from the Buckeyes in the big win over number four Ohio State earlier in the week. And then here, this Iowa game, you know, that second half, just as you guys are talking about, they absolutely dialed it up and dialed in and just completely took Iowa out of their game. But what really stood out to me about yesterday is, and I mean, this is a head coach having the utmost faith and confidence in his players, because he looked at Iowa, that does two things really, really well. They shoot the three exceptionally well. They're one of the best teams in the country shooting the three. And they get the ball down low to Garza, and they let him just go to work. And, you know, a year ago, Garza had, what, 40-something points against Michigan and 30-something points against Michigan. Mm-hmm. And it would have been very easy for Juwan Howard to say, you know what, we're going to double-team Luka Garza in this game. Every time he gets the ball down low, we're going to match up with him. We're going to bring a guard down to, like, harass him and leave those three-point shooters open. Instead, he said, if Garza gets 30 on me, so what? I'm going to take my chances and try to shut down and close out and stay with the guards. And that strategy worked big time. Iowa shot 6 of 19 from 3-point land because they had a hand in their face the whole time. And more impressively than that, Hunter Dickinson, and throw in Austin Davis and Brandon Johns, who each played 8 minutes, but Hunter Dickinson single-handedly took Luke Garza completely out of his game. You know, I know that Garza finished with 16 points, but he did it on 5 of 17 shooting. Like, it wasn't like he did it. It was an efficient 16 points. It was and that's 8 points below his scoring average for the season. Hunter Dickinson completely frustrated him, and he didn't let all the cheap stuff that Garza does, all the hooks that he does, all the elbows that he does, all that stuff. He didn't let that frustrate him at all. He just stayed his ground, got in his face, made shots difficult for Garza. I mean, that was incredibly impressive. A freshman outdueled the big senior in this pivotal game for Michigan.
Yeah, I think that everyone was looking, looking at the matchup of Dickinson versus Garza, and that was obviously a huge matchup. And Hunter was looking like he was the senior, and Garza was the freshman. You know, it did not. And I know that they're good friends. They trained together all summer long, I believe. And so this wasn't like a bad blood type of a matchup, but still, you want to go get yours, right? And there is a lot of competitiveness there for sure. But I have rarely seen Luka Garza look as frustrated as he was last night. So it was really, it was great to see Hunter go at it with no fear and be that guy. But the other matchup that I was looking at was Franz Wagner versus Joe Wieskamp. And part of that was because Wieskamp, the NCAA came out with their final five watch list for the top small forward in the country. And Joe Wieskamp was on that list, and Franz Wagner was somehow left off that list. Well, last night, you took a look at what happened, And Franz Wagner absolutely dominated. He had 21 points. He went, you know, 2 for 3 from 3-point land, 9 for 12 field goals. He had a plus minus of plus 29. Really, really impressive by Franz. And then Joe Wieskamp, Franz locked him down on the other side of the floor. Mm-hmm. Wieskamp had 11 points and 5 rebounds. He only went 1 for 5 from 3. He had a plus minus of negative 10. So I would say, you know, maybe they put that up in the locker room that Wieskamp made that list and Franz didn't, because Franz came out with a vengeance and it was really impressive. Franz, these last, I don't know, it's been 1 to 2 months now that he's played really well, but he is just showing everybody that he truly is a first round pick and maybe even a lottery pick at some point, because it's really impressive to watch him play.
Yeah. And Maddie, I don't know if you have any thoughts on watching Franz, but you know, the thing that stood out to me about the game yesterday with him too, was there was one stat, I don't know if you mentioned, Justin, and that was his 4 assists. And I think he could have actually had 7 assists if some of the guys finished around the basket with some of his passes. I mean, he made a couple of no look passes that, that, you know, Dick Vitale brought up Magic Johnson and then immediately dismissed it. There's only one Magic Johnson and Franz Wagner's not Magic Johnson. So, you know, I'm sure we can talk about the fact that when you get a Dick Vitale game, all you really want to do is mute the TV. How this guy went from being one of the best commentators in the sport to being one of the worst commentators in the sport is really unfortunate.
Him and Lee Corso, they're great. They just need to hang it up. I think nobody's going to hate on you for hanging it up when you're 80 years old, you know?
Absolutely. And here's the problem with, and I actually was really intently listening to the game yesterday. It was quiet in our house. John was asleep. My wife was sleeping on the couch next to me. And I was listening, and Dick Vitale spends so much of a game not actually talking about the game. He spends so much time talking about, and like, look, I'm on a board of directors for a cancer support community. Like, I understand the, you know, he's got his Dickie V thing coming up here to fight cancer, honoring Jimmy Valvano. That's an awesome thing. But I would bet that out of, like, you know, 2 hours of talking, that Dick Vitale only spends about 20 minutes out of those 2 hours actually talking about basketball. He spends the whole time talking about other things that are going on. And it's like, Dick, just tell me, like, analyze the game. Talk about Luka Garza. Talk about Hunter Dickinson. Like, I don't need all the periphery stuff. And so that was pretty annoying to me. I know that we just went down a rabbit hole and on a tangent here. but I had to say it when we brought it up. So back to Franz Wagner, really impressive game for him. You know, and Maddie, what did you think of Shaundé Brown, Austin Davis, Brandon Johns, and Terrence Williams coming off the bench? Like, this was a game where Juwan used his bench, maybe much more so than we have seen the last couple of games.
Yeah. I mean, I think that bench, you know, every player on Michigan's bench is very talented, and especially too, if, you know, Hunter or Franz, you know, they need a little bit of a break, to have great bench players that you can put in and not just be like, oh, put them in for, you know, 3 minutes while everyone else rests up and then take them out. You know, I think Juwan has faith in a bunch of the bench players like Shaundé Brown, where he can put them in and know that they'll really show out when they need them. And I think that will be great going into their next 3 games. I mean, they go Indiana and then back-to-back Michigan. Mm-hmm. These players are going to be tired. And I think to have a deep bench like that is very important. And two, going back to Franz, just pulled up Mo's stats when he was at Michigan. To have an older brother like Mo, I think that Franz has always been looked at maybe as the other Wagner, the, you know, Mo's brother, this and this and this. Franz is making a name for himself. I mean, really and truly. And I think too that Mo was such a great player at Michigan. He was really larger than life, really got the team going. To have a team like this year, I mean, they're a fantastic team, and to have Franz there, you know, scoring 21 points this game, I think that he is really differentiating himself from his brother and making, you know, his own path here at Michigan. And I think that Juwan really looks at him as someone that is a leader, as well as someone that can, you know, score these points and especially too in games like this where it was close, you know, going into the second half, but it wasn't that close. Once, you know, I think the Michigan State matchup will be very interesting. And I think that Franz will be one of those players that if he has a good game, you know, it'll be important. He needs to keep it going. If he has a bad game, I think it will affect, you know, the outcome of that back-to-back with Michigan State.
If I can comment, you know,
go ahead,
Mike.
Well, I mean, it will, but like the one thing, and I agree with you, like he is establishing his own legacy. Like I don't think there's anybody right now, and I actually hate it when ESPN, in which they did yesterday, which every broadcast like always shoots to a picture of Mo Wagner, like he's Mo Wagner's brother, and like the whole thing, like he is standing on his own right now. Like he doesn't need, he's not living in Mo Wagner's shadow Mm-mm. anymore. And especially if they go out there and take care of business, like we think they're going to. If they win the Big Ten, which they're on their way to doing, if they, you know, get to the Final Four or something like that, like he's definitely outside of that shadow. And I think, Maddie, you know, you talk about the bench and how important it's going to be. And we talk about that in a second. Like, look, you know, 39 hours, I calculated, 39 hours after they beat Iowa last night is when they will suit up and play against Indiana on the road on Saturday. Like the Big Ten did them no favors. If you're going to do this like back-to-back thing within, you know, 48 hours, maybe play that game at 4 o'clock or at 6 o'clock or at 8 o'clock at night on Saturday instead of being at noon on Saturday. But I mean, so the bench is going to be very, very important here in the next couple of days.
Yeah. So I did want to comment on how Juwan used the bench, because there was a time in the first half when Hunter had only one foul, but he sat for a pretty significant period of time. And Austin Davis was not having a great game. You know, usually Austin Davis does come in and has a solid performance. He'll be able to pick it up. But I think because of how good Luka Garza is, Austin Davis was really struggling. And so I'm thinking, oh my gosh, get Hunter back in there. He's only got one foul. There's, you know, we're halfway through the first half. He'll be okay. But Juwan proved me wrong because by the end of the game, he had, you know, Austin Davis had 8 minutes. Brandon Johns had 8 minutes. He pieced it together. Like you said, Maddie, these guys were Luka Garza wears you down. He is really tough to guard and keep up with. And I think these guys were dragging a bit. And there was even a shot at the end of the game where they looked at Hunter on the bench and he was like hanging over somebody. He was so tired. So it was really impressive to see how Juwan and this coaching staff pieced it together with those three guys to go up against Garza and not be completely dead, you know, and use their legs, use the three of them to be able to use all their strengths and not have Hunter play, you know, 40 minutes and be absolutely dead by the end of the game, especially when you're talking about what you just said, Mike, with the turnaround so quickly here against Indiana on Saturday. So I was really impressed with how Juwan used his bench. We've talked about this in the past that last year, that was one of Juwan's weaknesses, is he wasn't great with the rotation. I think he is now fantastic with the rotation. And I think this was the first time we had seen Terrence Williams in quite some time. And so he's been able to really piece it together. And like I said, I think a month or two ago, he looks at each team as a different situation for this lineup in rotation. He doesn't have an exact rotation. He says, all right, what do we got this week? Who do we got that we're playing? It's Iowa. I'm going to have a completely different rotation than I did earlier in the week against Ohio State. Which I think is a sign of a great coach and a lot of maturity coming from Juwan Howard.
Yeah, I mean, his exponential growth over these last 2 years is as good as I've seen of a coach at a major college, maybe in my career. You know, no joke there. Like, I mean, I can't remember a person who was, you know, let's face it, inexperienced. I mean, he'd never been a head coach before. He'd been a bench coach with the Miami Heat for a little bit. He had never recruited. He had never, you know, had been a tactical coach before, all these different things. And his ability to adapt and his ability to get the best out of his team and to develop these guys has been nothing short of amazing. I mean, he had that great success in his first year at the Bahamas tournament. And then there was a pretty significant letdown after that, where there were some struggles and some legitimate criticisms of the way that Juwan Howard was doing things. But I mean, he's pushed all the right buttons right now, and his ability to instill confidence in his guys. I mean, that's very John Beilein like. You know, I remember, I mean, how many times we wanted to write a player off under John Beilein, Duncan Robinson, Zach Irvin, you know, they're two of the most prominent ones that come to mind, Jordan Morgan. And yet John Beilein showed confidence, continually confidence, developed these guys behind the scenes, and eventually they would bust out. And Juwan has done that too. And you have everybody busting out and playing their best basketball for this Michigan team. It's really exciting to watch. Well, if you guys are like me, I mean, here we are on February 26th, and it has gotten a little bit warmer out this past week. We can't complain as Michiganders. We've had a mid-40 degree day. We've had a 50 degree day. You know, that's pretty awesome. But what we can't do, at least when I'm looking outside, I still got a couple of feet of snow on my ground. I can't play golf right now, and it's still going to be a while till I can play golf. And, you know, so would love to get out there. And in the meantime, a great opportunity from our guest, Kevin Johnston, the president and COO of OptiShot Golf, indoor simulation company. And Kevin, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. Good morning, guys. Love to be here. Fantastic.
Kevin, so tell us a little about OptiShot. Obviously, and I was on the website, looked at it. I mean, you guys have an extensive list of courses you can play. And more importantly than just the courses, it looks like it's a really good, like, user-friendly system.
Yeah, that's a perfect description of how we've kind of positioned ourselves and provided golf simulation to the marketplace. You know, golf in general, as we all know, one of the big words that's always thrown around is access, right? How do we get more people on better access to the game? Obviously, it has a price tag to it. If you want to go to a nice golf course, the equipment's not cheap. So OptiShot has kind of positioned themselves that we have a product lineup that fits almost everybody's budget if they're interested in improving their game or enjoying the game of golf. And simulation is a good start because it doesn't have a season realistically. So we have a broad range of products. Our Golf in a Box series is kind of our core, which evolved out of our core simulator technology called the OS2 Swing Pad. So that's our bread and butter. We've had that in play now for years. We've added other technologies to kind of build out the technology offering. We have a launch monitor called Ball Flight that jumps up in terms of price point because it's cameras. And then we have our overhead camera system called Vision, which is good for commercial environments and obviously tracks and measures both club and ball.
Well, I'm looking at it and looking at some of the swing pad technology and, you know, 32 sensors. You know, that are tracking your ball flight and distance and all that. What I want to know though is, can we eliminate some of those sensors so that my ball always goes down the middle of the fairway?
Right. Well, we can play with the wind if you want more distance, if that would help you. You for sure.
I mean, tell me, like, so just, okay. So kind of tell me, like, someone buys this and then what's the next steps? Like I'm looking at it, you know, we were talking beforehand. I'm like, I got to find a place I can put this in my house. How big of a wall do you need? Like, what are the specs here for someone to put this in their house, or as you said earlier, put this in their garage?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, at the optimal level, it's all about the immersiveness of the experience, right? You want to be able to swing a club freely and not feel like you're going to hit a pillar or a ceiling or anything that's non-movable inside of your space. So in a perfect world, you're 15 feet wide, 20 feet deep, and 10 feet high. That's the ultimate cube that you'd want to position one of the offerings and packages that we have. Can you get a little smaller? 100%. We get all the way down to 12 feet wide, 15 feet deep, and 8.5 feet high. And again, it just depends on your height and if you can freely swing a club, and obviously driver's the longest club in your bag and what your comfort is.
Well, I'm looking at the site here and looking at some of the courses and things like that too. Sure. And that's a great thing. I mean, you guys get to play a ton of courses.
Right.
And I know what you said earlier, like making golf affordable. I mean, you know, I'm thinking about just 2 weeks ago, the PGA Tour played their Pro-Am at Pebble Beach. Right. And so I got to fly out to Pebble. I got to fly out to San Diego, you know, which is a lot cheaper now than it is usually.
Yeah,
but I got to transport my golf clubs. And then I got to play the course, which is, you know, I think it's the going rate is around $350.
Correct.
You know, and so, I mean, this is one of those things where, look, it's a user experience. Like, how many of us are going to get a chance to play Pebble Beach? How many of us get a chance to play the Masters? But you can kind of do it. You can simulate it using OptiShot.
Yeah, that's a great segue. In terms of our course offerings, we got everybody from, you know, TPC Sawgrass to obviously Pebble Beach, St. Andrews. Pebble Beach is probably the one that's played the most, to be honest with you. Everybody loves getting to this little seventh hole on the ocean, and that's what we typically demo at sites. We were very fortunate. We've become the partner for the Rocket Mortgage Club since it kicked off in Detroit. We actually rendered the course in the software, so you can play the 15th hole, which is part of the 313 for charity. And that's a fun, well, all the stands are in there. You see all the Rocket Mortgage logos, and that's a fun experience as well. The good news about the way simulation has come along, it's a full round, right? So you can just go and play the par three. You can play a full round of golf. So you can test and improve your whole bag all the way to your putter. So you can putt in the simulators now, which is a massive improvement.
Well, Mike and Devin, I actually dusted off the clubs last weekend, went to one of the golf domes here in Plymouth. And so I will say I could have used this a few times before even going to the golf dome and seeing my flight of the ball. But yeah, I mean, when you're talking about price too, even going to one of these golf domes in the winter, which is really one of your only options, right? Here up in Michigan. But it's pretty expensive there too. I think it was $35 for an hour or something on the weekend. Right. So you do that 10 times and this thing pays for itself already. So
exactly.
Yeah. It's a really cool option. Like you guys have said, I think that this is something I probably will look into, honestly. It's if you're into golf and wanting to actually get better, which is, that's the one thing about golf for me, is you can't just go out every so often and be good, right? You do have to consistently play, and it does cost a lot of money to consistently play. So this is a better, a more affordable option to be able to consistently swing your clubs, especially up here in Michigan, right?
Yeah, that's a great point. If you just look at our Golf in a Box series, the starter Golf in a Box, you get the hitting net, the stance mat, and the technology, and you're under $800, and you're walking away with a full plug and play, and you're up and running here in a couple hours. It's a pretty impressive product for the price point.
Well, and I like it too, as Justin said. I mean, you know, the hardest part for any golfer in Michigan is unless you go to those indoor bays and you know, you're hitting in 30 degree weather with your gloves on, you're getting like the heater that's pumping at you a little bit.
Sure.
You know, I don't know about you, but like my game rounds into form in like late August, early September. Yeah. And the next thing you know, like I can't play golf anymore.
Right.
And so just the opportunity to get out there or to get, you know, into your house and to play in February, March, April, like maybe I can hit the ground running in May or June and then beat my father-in-law for once in my life.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I didn't grow up golfing myself. As I said earlier, I came through Canada as a kid. So hockey and soccer were my two sports because my parents were Scottish. And, you know, I'm a product of golf simulation because it gives you data. It's very repeatable. And, you know, I'm very fortunate enough to be in the business, but, you know, you swing 10 or 15 times for just 15 minutes inside the simulator, see your data. And that really gives you a position about how to improve your swing and your performance on the course.
Mm-hmm. Well, Kevin, it has been fun talking to you. OptiShotGolf.com is the website. Anything else to add in here to people listening to the podcast?
No, you know, my email address is actually Kevin@OptiShotGolf.com. If anybody listening and had further questions or want to speak to me directly, I love speaking to fans, customers, potential customers, and obviously improve the game and help our little business here in the corner of Michigan grow.
Sounds good, Kevin. Really appreciate you joining us. And looks like our two NHL teams are in the exact opposite space. The Toronto Maple Leafs are leading the Scotia North with 32 points, and the Wings have 15 points and are probably the worst team in the NHL right now. So, you know, as a long-suffering Maple Leafs fan, you're certainly enjoying their success right now.
My Detroit-loving wife is not happy with me, but I'm very pleased.
Well, I understand that. I understand that very well. So, Kevin, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Greatly appreciate it. Everybody be safe.
Thanks, Kevin.
Bye-bye.
But back to your guys' point. I mean, you know, again, 39 hours. Like that's when they play this game at Indiana on Saturday down in Bloomington. Now, Assembly Hall is going to be empty. There's not going to be fans there, which helps a little bit. This is an Indiana team coming off of losses to Michigan State and to Rutgers over the last last 5 days. So they're not in their best situation. But let me ask you this, like looking at the schedule now, how concerned are you about Michigan? And especially with the way that Michigan State is playing, you know, Michigan is playing from Saturday here. They're playing four games in their next 8 days. And really, they're playing five games in 10 days. So essentially, they're playing five games in 10 days, starting with last night's game against Iowa.
I mean, I look at it as this is a tournament before the tournament, right? That's how it feels. It feels like it's tournament time already for Michigan. I don't know what other situation you would play that many games in that few days. I was talking with a buddy last night, you know, as much as I would love for Michigan to go out and win the Big Ten tournament as well after this run here at the end of the regular season, you know, I'm going to be okay if they end up losing a game in the Big Ten tournament because they need a break. I can't remember exactly what the days are, but if they go out and the end of the regular season, play that many games, and then if they go to the Big Ten tournament and then the NCAA tournament and win both of them, say a Big Ten team wins the Big Ten tournament and wins the NCAA tournament, they'll be in Indiana for, I think, 35 days straight or something like that. So it's going to be just exhausting for these guys. And we've talked about it before on the last podcast too with the school that they have to do that people don't even think about sometimes and everything. But this, if Michigan can keep this up with this brutal of a schedule, that is even more impressive than when it normally would be. So I expect a couple of games here where they have a letdown. I see Indiana as a little bit of a trap game. We've talked about it here in the last couple minutes. I mean, you go to Bloomington within 39 hours on a bus ride. You know, how do you stay focused? How do you prep for that game today in order to get to Bloomington? They're going to be prepping on the bus. It's crazy. So I just think it's really, you know, it'll be really interesting then after this Indiana game, how these the Michigan State games pan out. As you said, Mike, they are playing really well. They beat two top five teams. Michigan beat two top 10 teams, and then Michigan State one-upped them this week and beat two top five teams. So Maddie, what do you think about these last three games and especially the last two to round out the regular season? How do you see that playing out with their last two games against MSU?
I mean, I think I completely agree with you guys. The Indiana game is definitely going to be something where it's more so how tired are they, not necessarily the matchup. I mean, Indiana is a good team, but I think the factors playing into the game with, you know, playing today and having Michigan State on that back burner always in the back of your mind, you know, how are they going to play against them? I think also too, as a student, it's midterm time, you know, these players, we talked about it last week, but, you know, these players are students too. And I mean, I'm sure that they're a little bit worried about school midterms on top of, you know, these important basketball games back to back to back. And I think too, looking at Michigan State, I mean, it was a close game last night against Ohio State. They ended up winning by 4. But looking at the Michigan State team, I mean, they have Aaron Henry, who scored 18 points last night, but then they have a bunch of players. They had three players that scored 8 points. Gabe Brown scored 11. I mean, they really have a bunch of players that can put up points, which I think Michigan may struggle with. You know, last night they only had to look out for Luka, really, and a couple of the players. But this Michigan State team, I think the back-to-back is going to be, it's going to be a nail biter. And I think that, you know, the 3 days where they have the back-to-back games, I'm not going to leave my couch. So I'm optimistic, but it's a lot to fit into the next couple of days.
Mike, I've got a scenario for you here. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right. So think about this. So Michigan could potentially wrap. John's ready too. I like it. So Michigan has a scenario here where they could wrap up the Big Ten championship regular season if they beat Sparty in Ann Arbor. So they play Sparty in Ann Arbor first and then go to East Lansing to wrap it up. So they could have the Big Ten championship wrapped up by that if they win that first game here in Chrysler. And then they go to East Lansing. What if Juwan says, hey, we've got it wrapped up. And we want to give our guys a break. So he rests the starters in the final game against Sparty. And would that be even a bigger flex than going out and beating them twice? I feel like that would be Juwan messing with Izzo's head. Maybe I'm thinking a little too much into it, but I just think that would be there would be so many Sparty fans out there going absolutely ballistic trying to rationalize that in their brains.
Well, I mean, it is a scenario, but I don't really think it's going to happen because I think Juwan has, you know, as a guy who played here at Michigan for 3 years, I think he has too much pride in that rivalry to let something like that go. At the end of the day, it is Michigan State, the chance to beat them back to back like that. And I think if he asked his players would say, no, like, we want to play them all out. We want to play them with everything we've got. And, you know, the thing about it is, you know, yesterday Michigan clinched the first and second round bye in the Big Ten. So even though we've been talking about the schedule and how difficult it becomes and the wear and tear on these guys, you know, they'll play that game, that second game on March 7th, and then they won't play again until March 12th in that, you know, quarterfinal matchup of the Big Ten. So they do get a little bit of a break. And because of that, I mean, if there was like a turnaround where they had to play on, you know, March 10th, I could see him saying, like, this is just too much for my guys, and I'm going to rest them. But I think they'll play both of them back to back. God, I would love to see. I mean, I'd love to see Michigan go 4-0 in their last four games. But you know, if they beat Indiana, they beat Illinois, they split with Michigan State. I mean, as hard as that would be, it's not the end of the world for Michigan fans. And I tell you what, too, guys. I remember when they decided they were going to do this. They're going to schedule these games. And I thought, like, man, you know, like, does anybody really want to see that? Well, now you look at it in the way that Michigan State is playing. I think everybody, CBS, I think BTN, you know, Fox Sports, like, everybody is going to want these two games here. This could be, you know, some really high drama if Michigan State can continue to play the way that they're playing, two gigantic wins over Illinois and Ohio State. So it's going to be very exciting to watch the final week. Final 8 days of Michigan season here.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with you. I think that you and I were both saying, like, why do you need to play Michigan State back to back? But now Michigan State, those games are going to mean so much possibly here. You know, they've set themselves up for a run at a tourney bid. You know, obviously going into the Big Ten tournament as well. But those two games could mean their season. And so these two teams, I imagine, are going to just go at it in that final game and in those last two. And so that's going to be about as must-see TV as it is out there. So I'm excited for that. You know how I feel about the Spartans. I have a bunch of friends that are Sparties that love to talk. And this is, you know, after the football season as it was and the game against MSU and how – they were 23 point favorites. I have not heard the end of it there. And so this is going to be fun for me specifically. And I think there are a lot of Michigan fans out there listening that are thinking the exact same, that want to stick it to their friends. So that'll be very fun. And then, you know, the thing is, I don't know about you, Maddie and Mike, it already feels like tournament time to me. I was in Ann Arbor yesterday. The sun was shining. It was 40-some degrees. I was like, this feels like March. And with this team playing like this, it really does, especially with how many games they're playing right in a row. So it's been fun to watch. One thing I wanted to ask you guys is, have you ever seen a team that makes blowing out good teams look so easy? I mean, last night they pulled away, and they made it look like Iowa was the bottom of the Big Ten team. Maddie, have you seen this, anything like this before?
Not really. I mean, I think too, like, obviously they're a great team, but to go into the half you know, only leading by a couple points, and then to just really blow them out in the second half. I mean, you're tired, you're, you know, everyone's played a lot of minutes by then, you know, it, towards the end of the game, to go out and really just make Iowa look crummy, I think it makes me confident for tournament time and going into these next couple of games, even if the score is close going into halftime or, you know, into the a couple minutes into the second half. I think that they can really blow out these teams if they have that mentality, and I think they can do it. I mean, they make it just look effortless, and, you know, they're tired. They've squeezed a couple games in even before this, after the 2 week pause, and they really, I agree, they just make it look effortless. And I think it's something that takes a lot of talent, especially against, you know, Iowa was ranked number 9. I mean, it's not like they're a bad team. It's a top 10 team. So it's quite impressive.
Well, and I'll say this. I mean, what you're watching have happen here too is Michigan is taking every team's best shot, and then they're saying, like, okay, your best shot is not good enough. You know, we can nullify you, neutralize you. We can take you out of your game. You know, they've done it with Iowa. They did it with Ohio State. They did it with you know, Wisconsin. They did it with pretty much everybody they've played. They've been able to neutralize. And so when you look at the games coming up here, you know, certainly Illinois, you know, it's going to be a big game. And then the two games against Michigan State, I mean, as well as Michigan State is playing, don't you have the confidence, or you should have the confidence as a Michigan fan, that Michigan is going to be able to get the job done, because they've been able to get the job done against everybody else. And so it's a lot of fun. You know, I'm excited about, even though I think it's kind of crazy, I'm excited to see them play in 39 hours, actually a lot less than that from when we're talking. It's 9 a.m. we're talking about right now, so it's 27 hours away for this Michigan-Indiana basketball game. And I want to finish, guys, just asking you this. Yesterday, some of the conversation again was Gonzaga and Baylor, and well, is Michigan deserving to be in that same conversation? Here's what I don't understand. At some point here, can we talk about who you've beaten, who you're, like, what your resume looks like, instead of, like, the fact that you don't have a loss? I get that Baylor is a very good basketball team. I get that Gonzaga is a very good basketball team. But if you dropped Gonzaga into the Big Ten, I don't think they're undefeated right now. If you dropped Baylor into the Big Ten, I don't think they're undefeated right now. And is that the only thing that's the difference between these two teams and Michigan, is that Michigan has one loss and they don't? Like, to me, I'm looking at Michigan. I've watched the last couple of games. I've watched them all season. I think they have every right to be on that same level. It's not number one, number two, and number three. It's number one, and number one. And I'm putting Michigan there.
Yeah, I could not agree more. I think Michigan has made the case, especially over the last week or two since they came back from that pause, to say, hey, it's not Gonzaga and Baylor. It's Gonzaga, Baylor, and Michigan. And I think there are some people out there that may say it's Michigan, Gonzaga, Baylor. That's how impressive they have been. And Gonzaga, listen, those two teams, I don't think anybody can hate on them. They've had very, very impressive years. And Baylor has played, you know, some solid teams. They've beaten Kansas. They've beaten Texas. They've, you know, they've beaten Oklahoma. So they've beaten some ranked teams. They've had some great games. And Gonzaga did the same early in the year. But I think there's something to be said about Gonzaga not playing a single good team in the last 2 months, right? So they're going to go into tournament time having to play, you know, nobody essentially for three quarters of their season. And Michigan's playing, you know, top 10 teams down the stretch, including that doesn't even include playing their rival back to back before they go into the Big Ten tournament. So I think you have to factor that in to say, all right, especially come Big Ten tournament time, there is no easy game for Michigan, Michigan State, anybody out there. It's going to be a battle every single time. Whereas Gonzaga is going to go out there and it's going to be an easy battle until they play St. Mary's in the WAC championship. Right. So yeah, I completely agree with you. It should be Michigan, no doubt, should be on that same, in that same conversation as those two.
Yeah, and I like what you said, Justin. It should be Michigan, Gonzaga, Baylor. I mean, looking at Gonzaga's schedule, they've really only played a couple of ranked teams and then a couple of you know, top 10 teams to on top of that. They beat Iowa, but even, you know, they didn't beat them by a ton. I don't think that a lot of people really look at schedule when they look at, you know, talking about tournament seeding and stuff. And Gonzaga is a great team, but a lot of the conversation I see on Twitter and stuff, it's, oh, Gonzaga, you know, number one, and they've beaten, you know, gone on a run for a while. But you got to look at the schedule, and you got to look at, you know, these teams and who they're playing and how often they're playing. Whereas, like, you know, they're playing, I've seen Gonzaga on their schedule, they beat like San Francisco, whereas Michigan's, you know, playing Wisconsin and OSU and Iowa, and then going off of this, it's gonna be Illinois. And I mean, Michigan State even is looking like a better and better team by the day. So it's a tough schedule, and I don't think anyone is really giving Michigan, or they're starting to at least, but I don't really think that in the past they've been giving them the credit that they deserve. I mean, these schedules are hard, and they really have shown out in a lot of these games, and I think that they definitely deserve the respect of a number one seed for sure, but also in a conversation with Gonzaga and Baylor 100%.
Well, the best part about this is it's all going to be moot in about 2 weeks. They're going to be down in Indianapolis. They're going to play the NCAA tournament, and, you know, the best team is going to rise to the top. And, you know, the way that I'm watching this right now, I have never felt, even in the 2013, the 2018, both Final Four runs, I thought were unexpected to some degree. When I'm looking at this team right now, I'm not going to say disappointed, because I understand how the tournament works, how crazy it can get, but I have every expectation that Michigan will be in the Final Four. And I have, and once you're there, if they're matching up with, you know, whoever the three other best teams in college basketball are at that point, I have every belief that Michigan can and is going to compete for a national championship this year. Like, that's how much confidence this team has given me with the way that they have played. They've got every piece that you could possibly have. They have the outside shooting. They have the great point guard, the senior leadership. They have an inside presence. They've got the ability to adapt quickly with this coaching staff. I mean, this is everybody's talking about it right now. There's been a debate. Are they, you know, as talented as the Fab Five? Are they the best team since the Fab Five? I mean, they have a chance to go out there and leave their own legacy. But this is as much fun as I've had being a Michigan basketball fan, and more so probably than the 2018 run, because, again, that was so unexpected. This is the most fun I've had since that 2013 season, when you knew you had a great team in Trey Burke and Tim Hardaway and McGarry and Stauskas and Glenn Robinson III and all those guys. So just kind of sit back, enjoy it. Big game again this weekend against Indiana. We'll talk more about that. We'll talk some football. And get into some hockey and some women's basketball in our next podcast this weekend.
Absolutely. So you can follow us at Stadium Main Pod on Twitter. You can follow myself at Justin Rowe 92. You can follow Mike at Michael Spath ITH, and you can follow Maddie at M_Mustgen. So follow us all. We'll be tweeting, I'm sure, and Instagramming and everything else about Michigan basketball over the next couple of weeks, because I agree, Mike, it's been fun. I'm having a lot of fun, and I don't want it to end. So very, very excited about watching some more hoops this weekend and beyond. So thank you guys for listening, and we will see you next week.
This is the Stadium and Main Podcast, presented by Kapnick Insurance Group, Wolverine State Brewing Company, and Lewis Jewelers.